Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker. Into the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown.
And he's got it at the 10-yard line.
Touchdown. Touchdown. Touchdown, Buffalo. The Bills win it in overtime.
Welcome. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Orchard Park. Welcome to One Bills Drive. We are coming to you from the building right next door to New Era Field. We're in the AdPro Sports Training Center. Bills getting set for practice today, getting set for the Philadelphia Eagles. The 3-4 Philadelphia Eagles coming to town this weekend. And the Bills just headed out to practice right now. We're going to get you to practice in a moment. Hi, everybody. I'm John Murphy. This is Bills all-time great Steve Tasker. Still getting that got your attention.
It did.
I don't know.
Like, who are you talking about?
I'm talking about you. Welcome to the show. We got a lot of ground to cover today about the Bills and the Eagles. Chris Brown's going to join us from the sidelines at practice momentarily. We'll get you updated on the injuries, what's going on around the Bills today. Field Yates joins us on Wednesdays, as he always does on Wednesdays. He'll be with us at 1 o'clock today. Field Yates, ESPN NFL analyst. Jordan Phillips, leading sack producer on the Buffalo Bills roster with three a couple of games ago against Tennessee. Jordan Phillips will join us. We'll get his take on how he felt going against his former team last Sunday and the rest of the year for the Bills' talented defensive linemen. All of that coming up on the show today, plus plenty of your comments and thoughts. It's an interesting week for the Bills, Steve. I would submit that, and I will put the Patriots game at the top of the list. To me, this is the second, by far, the second most interesting game the Bills have played this year, coming up this Sunday, the Bills and the Philadelphia Eagles. Look, Eagles 3-4, I see it, I know it, and they've lost a couple in a row on the road at Minnesota, at Dallas. They are a little bit dysfunctional now, but the remnants of that Super Bowl champion team remain for Philadelphia. The coaching staff remains. The
quarterback remains.
Well, he's even, you know, they didn't win the Super Bowl with Carson Wentz, but he's probably an upgrade over the guy they won the Super Bowl with. It's a tough game for Buffalo. I'm glad it's home, but it's a tough game for Buffalo. And if you listen, which we do, if you listen to Sean McDermott, I think he is spot on with the strength of that Philadelphia roster. It is the front seven, the guys up front. They're just outstanding. I've always been a Vinnie Curry fan since he came out of the draft. Derek, I was doing my chart last night. This is what got my attention, doing my spotting board. There's like four first-rounders in the front seven and front eight for the Philadelphia Eagles. They are good players up front, and that's what the Bills are going after this Sunday. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, and that's why – and what happens when you say that it's their first-rounders, what it means is – and I say this all the time, and for those of you who listen regularly, sorry – being in the first round in the NFL draft means you're special physically.
Yeah.
It means they can measure that stuff. They know you've got a top end physically. You're gonna be able to dominate certain matchups. You're gonna be faster than a bunch of the guys at your position. You're gonna be stronger or bigger than the guys at your position around the National Football League. You've got things they can measure physically that they know. You look great in a football uniform, basically, is what they're saying. You're faster, you're bigger, you're stronger, you're more athletic, yada, 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 on and on. That's what being first rounders means, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. So that's what you're looking at with this Philly front seven. They got a bunch of guys up there who, when they get off the bus, you're like going, oh, wow, look at those dudes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, we got to play those guys. That's what it looks like. And they're playing like that right now. They're playing well defensively.
You know what else they also have, kind of in a similar way that the Dolphins had it last week? They have desperation. It makes a team very dangerous. Look, and I know most teams are motivated in the NFL when they line up and hit the field on Sunday. But desperation, I think, adds a new element to it. The Dolphins had it last week and almost pulled it off. The Eagles come in with a much more talented and accomplished roster with a year and a half removed from a Super Bowl championship. And they are desperate, right? They can still win the NFC East. They probably think they're going to do it.
Huh? They're a game back, is all. To the Cowboys,
they
who
probably,
lumped them up last
they're
week.
Probably aiming towards that. Hey, we know who we are. We were in the Super Bowl a couple years ago. We're going to win this division despite these last two losses. They are a desperate and, I think, dangerous team, and I think it's a really fascinating game. I really do.
I can't wait
for this game.
Well, fascinating. I mean, the one is, when you say fascinating, to me it's like, wow, this is a tough game to win.
For both teams, I think it'll be
about,
a tough game.
You think this, and I don't think Philly fans believe it about Buffalo yet. I think they feel, I mean, they look at the teams that they've beaten, the winless Bengals, the winless Jets, the winless Giants, the winless Dolphins. They got beat by the only good team they faced, the Patriots. They beat the Tennessee Titans, who, you know, they've gotten worse since they played Buffalo. So that win has got the shine marked off of it. So the Philadelphia Eagles are coming in here thinking, you know, we're playing the best of the bad teams in the NFL right now.
The Eagles have three wins, one of them against Washington, one of the lesser lights, maybe one of the worst teams in the league, a win against the Jets, who the Bills beat. The Eagles beat them 31-6, and a win, the one that I got to look at it, I'll probably take a look at it today, a win at Green Bay just 3 weeks ago, the end of September, which is...
That's a good win.
That's a good win, and they
especially
did
now
well.
That Aaron Rodgers had his big game this last weekend, but you look at the game they had in the win, who'd you say, against the Jets.
Washington, Jets,
the
Green
Jets,
Bay.
They beat Luke Luke Falk, the Jets quarterback, so they played the Jets without Sam Darnold. This was in the mono when Sam Darnold got mono. That was in week 2 or 3. And, you know, so that's the win they got over the Jets, and that's why they lumped them up pretty good. So Luke Falk had an epically bad game that day against the Philadelphia Eagles, that defense. So, everybody's got warts on their record except perhaps the Patriots. And the Buffalo team, the only wart you could say about it is the quality of teams that they've beaten. So we'll see. I'm with you, Murph. This is a game against the Philadelphia Eagles that the Bills are going to have to play and play better than they did this last week in their win against Miami. They're going to have to play better than they did maybe against Tennessee to win this game. They're going to have to play as stout a defensive game as they did against the Patriots. So, you know, there's a lot of hoops to jump through and a lot of boxes to check before you think like you're going to play the Philadelphia Eagles and win.
Yep. We're going to take you out to practice with Chris Brown in a couple of minutes here on the show and find out what it looks like today on this Wednesday. It is chilly and like 50s and cloudy skies, a little bit of sunshine here in Orchard Park. Sunday's forecast calls for rain right now. The forecast for game time rain and a 60% chance of rain for the Bills-Eagles matchup, a high of 57. A referee Sunday is going to be John Hussey. First time the Bills have faced him. As far as participation, right? Because you're going up against that team also. Limited in practice today. Matt Milano, he'll be a story all week as he tries to come back from his hamstring. Duke Williams, who banged up his shoulder, returned and finished the game last Sunday against Miami. Duke Williams expected to be limited in practice today. And cornerback Kevin Johnson, who suffered a stinger and left the game last Sunday, he's expected to be limited as well. And we'll get the update face-to-face, eyes on the practice update from Chris Brown in a moment or two.
Lots of stuff going on, too. Tre'Davious White was named AFC Defensive Player of the Week by the NFL. He leads the National Football League since 2017, the year he came into the league, with 14 second-half takeaways. We talked yesterday about how clutch, whether you'd like to have Josh Allen remain clutch or be more consistent or whichever, however you want to put it. Tre'Davious White's clutch.
Oh, yeah.
When in the second half of games where, and then, let's face it, the Bills seem to always be in a tight game. Even 3 years ago in Sean McDermott's first year, they were in tight ball games. And Tre'Davious White is clutch with 14 takeaways in the last 3 years in the second half of those games. That, to me, qualifies as clutch, and good for him. He's the AFC Defensive Player of the Week.
The interceptions coming in bunches for Tre'Davious. He had two takeaways, two interceptions in the win over Cincinnati a couple of weeks ago, and then the fumble, forced fumble, and the interception, big, huge interception down at the one-yard line this past Sunday. Tre'Davious White, the AFC Defensive Player of the Week. Sean McDermott noted that today. Sean McDermott, head coach of the Bills, talked about it today when he met the media. He said Tre'Davious White playing at a very high level, and he's happy to see that he is the AFC Defensive Player of the Week.
Yeah, he's playing at a high level. You know, it's week to week, but he seems to continue to grow, and I think it's really a result of his habits during the week and what he learned from his first two seasons as well. He's using that and applying that every week.
What is it about his ability that just to make plays at the clutch the way he's done? That wasn't the first time he's done that, given that he's leading the league, or he's at 14 turnovers in the second half.
Yeah, he's in the moment. He plays in the moment, and he applies what he does in practice to the game on Sundays, and that's that's a good skill.
Good skill, good guy, fun guy. McDermott talked about that today, too, Tre'Davious White. Good for him. It's funny. We talked about him yesterday with Kyle Brandt from NFL Network, and the very next day I said, we got to raise this, Kyle, help us. Got to raise this guy's profile. And there he is, very next day, AFC Defensive Player of the Week. And yeah. I know Brandt talked about him on the network today. Look, White is a pro. He's one of the top four or five corners in the league. I know there are some good ones. New England's got one of them. But I think Tre'Davious White belongs in that conversation as one of the top corners in the league.
He certainly does, and I think he's been consistent over the first 3 years of his career, and I think that as much as anything, because we all do the same thing. You see a guy play well, and then, okay, must have been something going on. And then he does it the next year, and it's like, okay, wow, they got a good defense around him and stuff. And then the third year he does it, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, this guy's really good.
Yeah.
You know. And that's kind of the progression it's been for Tre'Davious White. Certainly a little bit of the – good feelings people are starting to have towards Tre'Davious comes from the success the entire team's having, and certainly the defense. But last year they were a top three defense as well, and they're doing it again this year. And Trey's a big reason why. I mean, he closes down a top guy on your squad, and that's hard to contend with. As you know, you're trying to hit on all cylinders to beat a good defense, and Tre'Davious White out there on the one corner has really been an asset for this team, and I think it's showing through. And they're not only in their pass defense and in their turnovers with him in the second half, but also in their total team defensive rankings.
Yep. They're good. He's good. We're going to get you out to practice in a moment. Steve, you had your hockey game last night. You had a good one. I actually watched much of the third period and the entire overtime. What a good win that was. Down 2-0 early, right?
Sabre yeah, four. They were down 2-0, and you thought, well, okay, this how are they going to do? They came back and tied it in the second period, 2-2, went up early in the third period, scored that quick go-ahead goal. Then late, the Sharks tied it up. We had all of the friends we had in town for the weekend. They're all Sharks fans. They had jerseys on even.
Oh,
I mean, they're like, right? So, and let me tell you this, though. This is the great part about it. So the last time they were here, they came also for a Sharks game. The Sharks got out to a 4-1 lead. This was last year, 2 years ago. I can't remember what it was. The Sabres came back and tied it up in the third period and then won it in overtime. The same thing happened last night. They went into overtime, and, of course, Jack Eichel puts the game winner in on a scrum in front of the net, and they win it again in overtime. The Sabres won it in overtime again. Win-win for us, because if we win, right? And if the Sabres somehow lost that in overtime, well, and at least we were good hosts, you know. But what a great hockey game. That's two games in a row, home and home, with the Sharks that have been really good hockey games. Of course, they're good hockey games for us in Buffalo because the Sabres won them both. But all the way through all three periods, both teams really played some great hockey. And I was thinking about this, too. And you think about and I don't want to go overboard, but the transformation from what we saw last year to this year, right? I mean, now they're 8-1-1.
With
a very
similar roster, right?
Right. I mean, there's five new guys on this roster, and they didn't transform it. It's not like 19 new guys. It's just, you know. But the transformation, you got to give Ralph Kruger a lot of credit for what's happened. And it's not just him standing up at the front of the room. Whatever he's communicated to him, the people he's brought in around him, the message he's given to this team, you know, it's taken hold. And you give the players a lot of credit as well. I mean, they bought in, they got these new players, and they're kind of coming together. And obviously this. And I was thinking today about what I see in Ralph Kruger. You can take what I know about hockey and put it into a shot glass, and you still have room for liquor, right? I mean, because I don't know that much about hockey. But I was looking at Ralph and what he's bringing. I said, what's the deal? And I'm looking at him. You know who he reminds me of? And I hadn't thought about this until this morning. He reminds me of Marv. He's an older, kind of has this older kind of presence, right?
Yep.
He's only 60. Marv was 60, like, 8 when he got the job in Buffalo. But he has this older, mature kind of thing. He's way older than his players, or seems way older than his players. He's a really calm communicator and highly intelligent. So there's all of that going. He has a real plan. And also in his message to us, and when I heard Marv speak to us, and when I hear about what Ralph says to his players, you can always tell he's for the players. He wants them to be better. He wants them to be good. He's not this confrontational, you got to be better. You got to do this. It's your fault we're losing, or it's you got to be better, or we win in more. It's always like, hey, let's get better. Here's what we need to do better. It's a real positive. He's for the players, right? He's for them. He's for them personally. He's for them professionally, because he knows that's for the good of the team. That's a lot of what I got And you remember about Marv being, you know?
I just looked it up. Marv was 61 when he came here to take over.
Okay, they're the same age.
Are they? Okay.
Oh, I guess that's right.
I don't know how old Kruger
Marv,
is.
Kruger's 60, Kruger. I heard, this morning.
You're comparing, though, and this I'll just offer this, a Hall of Fame caliber coach, Marv Levy, a Hall of Fame coach, to a guy who's got 10 NHL games on his resume.
Yeah, that's who he reminds I got to tell you, he's who he reminds me of. Just, and I don't know if they're going to have the kind of success we're talking about with Marv. But that, but also the thing about Krug that reminds me a little, another similarity to Marv was Marv had this persona when he came to Buffalo. Certainly, he had coached in the NFL with the Kansas City Chiefs and the USFL and the CFL. But he also had this thing about him where he's a Harvard grad and he was an English literature major, right? So he had this kind of bigger persona that went outside of the sport, right?
Right.
And Krug coming over from
Krug, you're
I'm on a first name. Okay. We're like this. So he comes over from football, and he was running a soccer team, right? So he has this wider range of experience that gives him, I don't know what it gives him, what, credibility or a wider experience, a field of experience, whatever it is. It's kind of the same thing that I saw with Marv. So he kind of gets this different sense of credibility with what the message he's bringing, with something that may work, that it's not just the same old thing. It's something outside of the sport that's been brought in.
Kruger is 60, just turned 60 in August.
And yeah, and Marv quit when he was 70, so he was here 11 years. So, yeah, it would have been 61, 60, 71 when he quit. So,
right,
yeah.
I hear you. We'll
you know
see
what
how
I mean?
I know what you mean.
And I don't know if it – because, listen, it wasn't a transformative thing when Marv showed up. I mean, they got a little better, but they still
– they played one-eighth of their season. There's a long way to go. Sabres.
Yeah, I mean, I came in, I busted in on the instigators during one of their breaks today. I go, okay, there's only one question about the Sabres for me now. I'm like, how good
Where
are
do I
they?
Buy playoff tickets?
Yeah, how good are they? I mean, what am I looking at here? Are they this good? I'm like, what real? Because I don't know. Like I told you, I don't know anything. I'm just watching. I'm like, going, how good are they? Because they just got got punched in the mouth by a team they just beat barely, and they came back and won that game in overtime. I go, how good are they? That's the only thing I want to know. I what am I looking at here? Am I going to have to, you know, start setting aside playoff money so I can buy tickets?
That you won't let me buy? Yeah, probably.
Right. Because I got to buy them all myself for me. Think about it.
Yeah, I know.
That's really the only thing.
You got some time. You got some time and some games.
Well, and you and I were just talking. What's it going to be like when they go through it? They're 8-1-1. What's it going to be like when they go, you know, 3-6-1? What's that stretch going to be like? Or 2-8-1? You know, what's it going to be like during that stretch? How's this going to work? How are they going to be? Or maybe there won't be. I don't know. But that's the test. So the game last night was great. Big crowd, a lot of fun. You know what I didn't do? I did not go to the fried bologna place.
Oh, after all that yesterday?
After all that yesterday, I did not get a chance to go to the fried bologna spot.
No fried
bologna
for you.
No,
I got one more old coach to talk about, and he's a friend of mine, and he's 66 years old, and he's making his NBA head coaching debut tonight, my buddy Tom Beilein. I'm pumped.
Former Michigan coach.
Yeah, I went out and bought the NBA league pass so I can watch the Cavs on Orlando tonight, 7 o'clock. I won't watch all 81 games. You don't watch all 82 NBA games. You don't watch
all
82
the
Sabres
games?
No.
No.
But I will watch tonight.
You'll watch a chunk of them.
I'll watch tonight.
Yeah.
Because it's first game. I'm really excited for him. You know, he's done a lot. Final fours.
Yeah, this is for him. You
got to
think. You
got to
think
old.
That this could be. You know, you never say never, but it could be his last coaching stop.
Oh, I would
think
so.
Right.
Yeah, I would think so.
And depending on what kind of success he has.
Yeah. I'm excited for him.
Good for him. Yeah.
I look forward to watching that tonight. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's great to see a really successful college coach take that step to the next step because it's a different group.
Different
guys, different game,
different
strategy, also different demographic in your locker room.
Yeah.
You got guys who are
millionaires.
Yeah.
one of them.
Every one of them is a business,
yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
They got their own agendas. So you got to, like, you know, knit that together. That's,
It'll
good
be fun.
For him. Good luck to him.
I look forward to him. Yeah.
We're
going to Cleveland.
We got to go to
once
Cleveland.
Once we get through
this
football
season. We'll do it.
Yeah. We got a good show, as we said. We got a good Twitter poll. Look. The NFL trade deadline now is 6 days away. The NFL, the trade deadline has been more active in recent years. That's a good thing. I think it adds some interest. It's not like the baseball trade deadline. It's not like the hockey trade deadline where there's, you know, wall-to-wall coverage on trade deadline day. It's not like really the NBA trade deadline. But it's a little more active today. The Bills have been a little more active on the trade market with Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott. And I know there's sentiment out there. People say, make a deal. Let's go. They got to make a deal. 6 days left. What are they going to do? Receivers are moving around the league. Safety's moving around the league. What do they need? What should they do? So that's our Twitter poll today. The NFL trade deadline now less than a week away, 6 days away. In your opinion, we're only looking for your opinion here. How badly do the Bills need to make a trade? How badly do they need to make a trade? Call us up. Let us know. 803-0550. Outside Buffalo, it's a toll-free call. 1-888-550-2550. Send in a tweet. We can read them on the tweet sheet. Got a couple that lined up here. Or vote in the Twitter poll. How badly do the Bills need to make a trade right now? We're just underway. 500 votes in on the Twitter poll. 77% of you say make a trade only if it's a deal you cannot pass up. That makes a lot of sense. 19% of you say badly they need to make a trade. This is our year. 5% say not at all. We're 5-1. Relax. Look, I'll listen to it. I would vote with the majority there. Yeah, if somebody comes to you with a ridiculous offer, not likely to happen. Somebody says, how'd you like this guy? And you're thinking, I know this guy. I like this guy. He can help us. You'll make that deal. Like 3/4 of our respondents say, but not at all. We're 5-1. Don't bother. Only 5% believe that. 19% badly. Make a trade. We really need one because this is our year. And that's an argument I keep hearing, Steve. Look, it's a great start to the season. I've heard people argue that they owe it to the people in the locker room, the players in the locker room, to make a trade, letting them know that it's important. I don't know. What do you think?
No, you look at it both ways. No question. There's a sentiment out there where the players, but when you look around the players, it's hard to sell that to the players knowing that they trade for a guy and your best buddy over here sitting in the locker next to you is gone because now they don't have a roster spot for him. That's kind of hard to sell to some guys. But it's part of what they've put in place here. Listen, you earn your way on and off the field. We've seen guys get benched and put in the, and all of this, Duke Williams is on the field for a reason. They needed some more production out there. So there's that mindset. They know that it could happen, no question about it. But I also think you got a guy like Sean McDermott who stood up at the front of the room this morning and said, hey, I like the guys that we got. And he does. But let's face it, most fans would say, listen, if we're going to beat the Patriots, we need one more guy at least on offense. We need that wide receiver on offense.
See,
we need a weapon on offense.
We got to get into this in depth, and we got to get to Brownie in practice. But my position is I don't know if there's a guy that makes that difference that you get in late October in the trade deadline. Who makes that difference?
I'll tell you, though.
Who?
I told you this. Last year I was doing the Carolina and Cincinnati game. Cincinnati was going to win that game until A.J. Green went out of the game with a pulled muscle, and all of a sudden – Carolina stole that game from him. And I'm telling you what, it was a palpable difference in Cincinnati's ability to move the ball when A.J. came out of that game.
He's a great player.
He's a great player.
He's
I don't know if you can get a player,
player
like
he's
that.
He needs a contract next year, and you're giving up at least one first-rounder to get him.
Yeah, see, I'm not up for that. I'm not
me
up
neither.
For that. I'm sorry.
We'll talk more about this. How badly do the Bills need to make a trade? What do you think? Give us a call. We'll have time to talk about it. We're going to talk with Chris Brown standing on the sidelines at Bills practice when we return. Come on back. Show's just getting started. We got a lot of room to cover here. Come on back. One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health, live from the Seneca Studio, Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing comes close. Come on back. We're going to practice next. One Bills Live. We're coming to you from Orchard Park, right where the Bills work. We're inside the front end of the Ant Pro Sports Training Center in the Seneca Studio. Outside, 1, 2, 3 sets of doors is Bills practice. They just started about 10, 15 minutes ago, and our man Chris Brown, Bills insider from BuffaloBills.com, is standing by in the sidelines at practice. Hello, Brownie. It seems a little blustery out there, a little blowy, huh?
It is windy.
Yeah,
it is
that's
about
what I meant.
30 to 35 mile per hour gusts. Not sustained, but kind of ebbing and flowing out here a little bit. So it'll certainly be a challenge for the quarterbacks today to a certain extent and getting reads on the football for the receiving targets for sure. The weather forecast for Sunday is supposed to be rain and 57. I don't see anything in there for wind, so I don't know that this will necessarily be any beneficial prep for the weekend.
Gotcha. Let's talk about prep for the weekend and where the Bills stand as far as some of their injured. Matt Milano got hurt, 3 weeks ago in the win at Tennessee, and he is McDermott said he'd be limited today with his hamstring. What do you see out there from Matt Milano?
Yeah, I mean, he's moving around here during the individual position drills. He was moving well last week, too. He wasn't really holding back, at least from what I could observe. But again, as we know, this is an organization and an athletic training staff and a medical staff that errs on the side of caution with soft tissue injuries. We saw Devin Singletary and Taron Johnson sit out for the better part of a month. And it wouldn't surprise me if both of those players were good enough to play in that Week 5 game against Tennessee. They waited an extra week. And Coach McDermott did admit to me coming off of that game against Tennessee that knowing the bye week was sitting there the very next week did factor into their thinking in sitting Devin Singletary and Taron Johnson for that game against Tennessee and waiting until Week 7 this past week before they started to integrate them back into the lineup. So we're only, as you mentioned, a few weeks removed from the time that Milano sustained that injury. It will be 3 weeks on Sunday. He may come all the way through the week. If he's limited all week, I really don't see him playing on Sunday. And if you remember, Devin Singletary was a full participant the Friday before the Tennessee game coming off his hamstring injury, and he still did not play. So I don't know if we can count on Milano being in the lineup this week. We'll have to see how the rest of the week pans out. But knowing how they have operated to this point, I think it's 50-50 at best. I think the guy that's got a better chance is Corey Thompson coming off the ankle scope. And if he is up and available to play, I would expect him to start for Milano rather than Maurice Alexander, who we saw last week with both Thompson and Milano out of the lineup.
I was going to ask you next, Brownie, if Milano is out and Corey Thompson is available or if he's not available, the Philadelphia Eagles have got some pretty good tight ends that you know, a lot of Bills fans watch.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
A defense without Matt Milano struggled to be the kind of defense we'd expected this season. How are they going to change it? And maybe with an extra week and seeing how their team played, they'll have a different plan entirely about how to deploy their linebackers without Matt Milano in. What do you think about how the defense will change given how they played last week?
Well, I think Thompson offers them more versatility at the linebacker position than Alexander. Miami had a good offensive scheme last week. They made a point of keeping Buffalo's base personnel out on the field by using their fullback in a lot of their early personnel groupings. They wanted to take advantage of a player who was inexperienced in this defense with the 10 other players in Maurice Alexander, and they accomplished that by keeping Buffalo's base personnel on the field. What Thompson offers is better versatility at the linebacker position. He has the athleticism to be a three-down linebacker. He's a better coverage player, and he's a better runner. He's just simply faster and more athletic than Maurice Alexander. And if you remember, you go back to the summer, Corey Thompson had a really strong training camp, made big strides with his game, knows this defense well now that he's in his second year in it. And so I think he would be the guy that gets the call if Matt Milano doesn't play on Sunday.
Chris Brown joins us from the sidelines of Bills practice or outside on the windy grass practice field number one outside the Pro Sports Training Center. Chris, I was really, really happy, and I don't usually care too much about the AFC Defensive Offensive Players of the Week, but, man, Tre'Davious White earned that honor this week, the AFC Defensive Player of the Week, and I'm sure his teammates, and you could tell Sean McDermott feel pretty good that he was honored that way by the entire league today.
Yeah, I mean, he was the spark that turned the game around.
Yep.
I mean, I even asked Coach McDermott that after the game. I said, was Tre'Davious White the spark you needed to win this game? And he pretty much agreed that, yes, he was. And even Josh Allen after the game said, you know, Tre'Davious is, with his play gave us some juice on offense, and that was evident because they drove 98 yards down the field and stuck it in the end zone. And so you look at that, and then you look at his forced fumble at the end of the game. He turned the game around. And there's a stat out there, and I hope I get this right, but I believe 12 of Tre'Davious' career turnovers have come in the second half of football games.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't just make turnover-type plays, big-type plays. He makes them in big-time situations. I mean, he had two takeaways in the Cincinnati game that helped seal the game against the Bengals in week three. You can go back to the Kansas City game, the interception he had in the fourth quarter to seal that game, which was a one-score game at the time in his rookie season, the Tampa Bay game here in Buffalo, his rookie season, where he punches the ball out of Adam Humphrey's hands. They get a recovery. They kick a game-winning field goal to win the game. So he not only makes big plays, he makes them in big moments.
One of the things about Tre'Davious's performance last week was the fact that he didn't get targeted very much because the team, the Miami Dolphins, were going right at Levi Wallace. They were putting big-time physical receivers on Wallace. And how do you expect the defense to evolve given the fact that the Philadelphia Eagles have got Alshon Jeffries and they may do the exact same thing?
Right. I think where Levi struggles is in press man. That's where he has problems. In zone coverage calls, he's outstanding. But when they go to a man call, and they had to do that a little bit more last week, they relied on their corners a little bit more than they usually do. Levi had a little bit of trouble in getting good jams on the guys at the line of scrimmage, and they won a couple of times off of good release technique. So it's going to be interesting to see how Leslie Frazier calls the game this week, knowing the size and stature of the receiving targets that Philadelphia can put on the field, chief among them Alshon Jeffrey, as you mentioned. It's also going to be a challenge for Buffalo's safeties this week, not only because of Zach Ertz, who's the leading receiver on the Eagles squad, the tight end, but his counterpart at tight end, Dallas Goedert, who goes 6'5", 6'6", and has made plays down the seam for them. So there are some size mismatches that Philadelphia throws at opposing secondaries that really present problems. Whether you're covering them in man or you have good coverage on them or not, they simply outreach you for the football.
Chris Brown keeping an eye on practice for us. He's outside on the grass practice field. I want to ask you about the Buffalo offense, Chris. And the three of us spent a lot of time before the Dolphin game talking about, you know, kind of the new additions to the offense and some guys who may have a role to play. And I'd love to see Duke Williams jump into a more prominent role on the offense, but limited today, I guess, right, with his shoulder. Who knows if he'll be ready to play on Sunday?
Yeah, he's got a red non-contact jersey out here, as does Kevin Johnson, who's coming off the stinger that he suffered in last Sunday's game. And John Brown is not out on the field today.
Huh.
You know, we know he was dealing with a groin injury last week, played almost 100% of the snaps last week, but perhaps there's some residual soreness there, and maybe he gets the day off today for that, and hopefully he's back out here tomorrow. But, yeah, he's not out here either. Kurt Coleman is another veteran player getting a veteran rest day. He left the game for a period last week, so I don't know if that's injury-related or a veteran rest day situation. And then Pat DeMarco and Lorenzo Alexander, Ty and Secchi, all getting veteran rest days, as has been customary for those guys. So, yeah, some nicked-up guys. And John Brown, obviously the biggest name on that list, knowing his importance to Buffalo's offense.
Steve wants to know when he gets a veteran rest day.
Yeah, right. That's exactly right. Also, I want to ask you a little bit about were you surprised at Devin Singletary's role in the offense against the Dolphins? He was on the field for 22 of the 56 snaps. Didn't get that many opportunities to touch the ball. What do you make of that?
I see that as, re-acclimating him to the speed of the game, the reads that he has to make. But, yeah, remember, guys, I mean, he played a 1 3/4 games of NFL football in his life, and then he missed 4 weeks. I think they were a little reluctant to just throw him back in the fire and give him 15 to 20 carries. I just think that was an unrealistic expectation, knowing how methodically this coaching staff operates in developing players, in immersing players in certain responsibilities in games. And so I think the plan was, let's ease Devin Singletary back into the fold here, remembering that he is a rookie with limited experience, and see how he does. And I thought he did okay last week. He did good in adjusting to some of the changes at the line of scrimmage. One that comes to mind is the pass that went to Duke Williams as he ran a pattern on a crosser right to left. Josh changed the protection, and that put Devin Singletary in a situation where, off a play-action fake, he had to pick up a blitzing slot corner, and he did a good job of that, and the play went for a first down to Duke Williams on an over-the-shoulder throw. So I think he availed himself well despite the layoff, and so I anticipate he will get more work this week than he did last week.
Chris, I know we're kind of running short on time, but I do want to ask you about one, I think, intriguing matchup this game, and it's Buffalo's developing young quarterback, Josh Allen, now will be his 18th start, going against Jim Schwartz. Schwartz is not, you know, the Belichick group there, but he's got a plan. He'll know what to do with a young quarterback like Josh Allen, won't he?
Yeah, and, you know, we're going to see that wide nine technique that we remember from when he was here with Buffalo. And, you know, it's gonna alter the spacing up front. It's going to put the tackles out on islands a little bit more. And that has me a little bit concerned for Cody Ford, knowing that he's struggled in sometimes oversetting to account for pass rushers taking a wide run at quarterbacks around the pocket. And sometimes he'll overset and get beat inside. So it's going to be interesting to see how they set up the protections this week, knowing the scheme that Philadelphia employs. And it's a great defensive line. It absolutely is. But they are nicked up to high heaven on that side for Philadelphia. They're banged up at a number of positions, including corner, where they're going to probably have to reinsert Sidney Jones as the nickel. And if you talk to Philadelphia fans and listen to Philadelphia sports radio, they loathe the former first-round pick. So they're banged up at defensive tackle as well, and they're not going to have Tim Jernigan. They already lost Malik Jackson, who's on IR. They picked up a couple of guys off waivers that they have just as depth at defensive tackle. So hopefully the thin numbers for Philadelphia's defensive line makes them a little bit less effective than they're known to be.
Hey, Chris, thanks for this. We'll check you there at practice again tomorrow. Thank you.
You got it, guys.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, gives us a lot to talk about. We're going to take a break and come back and talk about that. Plus, how badly do the Bills need to make a trade? They've got 6 days left until the deadline. Let us know what you think. We'll open up phone lines when we come back. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. One Bills Live, presented by Kalina Health, live from the Seneca Studio on Buffalo Bills Radio. One Bills Live, John Murphy, Steve Tasker here until 3 today. Field Yates from ESPN is going to join us today at 1 o'clock and after practice. Jordan Phillips, Bills defensive lineman. What do you think? How badly do the Bills need to make a trade? Give us a call. Let's discuss. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. To the phones we go. Mark in Buffalo. Hello, Mark.
Hey, good afternoon, Mr. Murphy and Mr. Tasker.
Good afternoon.
He doesn't need one of those veteran days off. From the sounds of it, he's had one for 2 weeks. Whenever.
That's a good point by you, Mark. Yeah. Thanks for calling. Goodbye.
No, I'm teasing.
Go ahead, Mark.
Do they really have to make a trade? I mean, what are you going to get? You're going to have to give up really like a first-round pick for something really good. I mean, if you can get an unbelievable trade, yeah. But if not, I think you stay where you're at for two reasons. One, you don't want to give up those big assets. And number two, they still believe in all those guys in the room and on the practice squad. So now if you bring somebody in, that bumps one of those players out. So I'd stay where they're at and roll the dice and go where they're at. Maybe linebacker, if they deem missing Matt Milano that much, was the big reason. I'll hang up and listen, guys.
I hear you, Mark, and I kind of agree. And here's the thing. There's three choices on our Twitter poll. How badly do the Bills need to make a trade? The second choice, B, is this. Only if it's a deal you can't pass up. That applies to every moment, 12 months a year, 365 days a year. They're always going to never pass up a deal they can't pass up, right?
Yeah.
Right. So that goes, that means keep on keeping on. My point, and I'm kind of right there. You're always in that mode. You're willing to make a deal that you can't pass up. But not at all. You're 5-1. I'm kind of there with you. Listen, it hasn't been perfect. We've got ups and downs, but we also have a very young team. And we also have an offense who I think we all agree, you know, you got the top, one of the top two, three defenses in the National Football League. So, you know, who wants to tinker with that? So you look at the other side of the ball, the offense. Okay, well, we got 9 new starters. Let's give it a chance. And we all expect the things they did well last year where 9 of the guys are not good enough to play on this team. The things they were, that only thing they were able to do well last year, the long ball, is the one thing that kind of we're missing out of the mix here this year. Well, you know, that's a good trade to me. 9 new starters that are virtually, every single one of them is an upgrade. I'll take that.
It's not
instead of the long ball.
It's not as if they've been standing pat, as Steve said, nine new starters on offense. And it's also not as if they've had a lot of time together, six games, you know, just getting together. Offensive line never got together in preseason, you know, or the training camp. Sean McDermott was asked this question today, which kind of put it at the front of our agenda. What do you think, Coach McDermott? Do the Buffalo Bills need to make a trade? Do you need to show your players in the locker room that you're ready to strike this year by making a trade? Here's what the head coach said.
I think they know where we stand. I'm extremely confident in the guys we have.
That pretty much, I'm not saying that ends it, but it kind of lets you know where they're thinking.
Well, he ended it right there. He likes look for the next question.
The answer, yeah. Right? But that doesn't mean, look, we know how these guys are. And we were talking before we went on the air. If it weren't for that the trade deadline activity that Bean and McDermott had 2 years ago and the subsequent trade activity around the draft, for instance, you might say, well, that's it. They're not making a trade. But you don't know. These guys are pretty aggressive when it comes to restocking personnel.
I think that's why he kept it to a short answer. He goes, hey, I just like the guys. I like the guys we've got right now. That, to me, ending it right there doesn't mean they're not interested in making a trade.
Right.
And I know Brandon Bean is one of these general managers. We're kind of getting the sense of this when things come out, like in the offseason. They make the phone calls. They're asking about what these guys are out there for. How can we get this guy? And I tell you this, too, and I said this before, and I don't say it very often, but this is what I believe. I think Brandon Bean and Dan Morgan and you know all these guys, Joe Shane, and all the guys, Malik Jackson, I think they're calling teams about guys who are not even on our radar.
Oh, sure.
You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
They're talking to teams about their second wide receiver, their third wide receiver out in you know whatever team you want to pick. They're asking about guys like that because they know about it. They watched them on film. They've studied these guys. So I think those are the kind of guys that – the Bills are asking. Certainly, they've asked about the top-flight guys like the Julio Joneses and the A.J. Greens. I read a tweet today. There's a rumbling out there that the Cincinnati Bengals know that A.J. Green is not going to be back, and they're kind of extra holding him out from his foot injury in the preseason to make sure that he's healthy so they can get the best deal for him in return. Cincinnati is notoriously hard to deal with, and they do not negotiate. They have a price, and you're going to meet it, or they're not going to deal the guy. We'll see if that happens. But I think for sure the Bills have called about all those top flight guys that we all know their names. But I also know they're probably asking about guys whose names we don't know. That's how much faith I have and much knowledge I have about how they do things here in the building these days. I don't know if it's always been that way, but I certainly believe that's the way it is now. So if there's a deal out there to be had, the Bills are going to have it. And that's it. I think it's going to be the right deal or it's not going
to
happen.
Let's take a call here from Joe in Tonawanda. Joe, what do you think? Do the Bills need to make a deal before the deadline next Tuesday?
Yeah, well, I just agree with everything that was just said, but here's what I want. I want A.J. Green now because injuries are so possible. Look what just happened to Brown and Williams. I don't care what it takes. If we get Green now and still lose to New England, at least we know we tried our best rather than not know and wonder what if.
Green is injured and has yet to play. He is injured. When is he ready to play? I don't know.
Okay, and
we're
also
really in a red-hot panic to trade for a guy who has yet to take a snap this year.
And also, Joe, and I hope Joe's still there. Joe, you still there? Joe's not there.
He cut himself off.
Here's the thing. He's 31. He's in the last year of his contract. Now, the Bills do have some cap space, no question about it. But here's the only problem I see with A.J. Green. I think he's the right kind of guy. From what my dealings with him, he's a stand-up, good teammate, hard worker, all of the things you want in the DNA that Sean McDermott's working for. At least that's what I know about him. They may have more information than me. But that is a given in this scenario. The only thing that worries you about him is he's 31 and he's injury prone. He's has trouble these days staying healthy. But I'll tell you what, no question, when he's healthy, he's the best receiver on any team he's on. He's the best receiver on any team. When he's healthy, he is unstoppable. So, yeah, he's a guy you'd love to have. But I don't know that I'm willing to trade a player of the caliber of Josh Allen or Tremaine Edmonds or Ed Oliver, or any other first-round pick you can name, Tre'Davious White. I don't know that I'm ready to trade one of those guys up for him at this point in his career, because that's what you're given at a first-round draft pick.
Let's take one more call here. Tom on the west side. Hello, Tom. You're on the air.
Afternoon, guys.
Hi.
Steve, thanks for clearing that up, because A.J. Green is always getting hurt, and that's what scares me about him. And I wouldn't bet the farm on him. But anyway, I don't think that the Bills need to trade, because they almost beat New England the first time, except for Allen getting injured and Barkley almost won the game. If they could just stop the penalties, then they're beating themselves. And I hear Kyle Brandt calling the Bills out needing one more offensive weapon, but we're right there with them. We could play toe-to-toe with New England right now. And, Steve, don't get too high on the Sabres, because they did this to us last, and then they fell apart.
10 straight wins last year. Yeah. You remember that.
Well, yeah. I'll tell you this, though, Tom. You're right. The penalties are a problem. You got to fix those. But here's the thing, too, and I'll say this about the Patriots. I don't believe, aside from the quarterback and whoever you line up there at that spot, but at this point, at 42, maybe not, talent has never been the issue of beating the Patriots. It's execution, and it's mistakes. The Patriots don't beat themselves. And you have to, and you have to do it without making it hard on yourself. You can't take a bad penalty. You can't take a bad sack. You can't take a pre-snap penalty. You can't take a bad timeout. You can't take a bad challenge. You can't misstep on punt protection to give up a touchdown. You can't do any of that stuff and beat the Patriots. The talent level, I like our team better. But man, oh man, they execute and technique you to death. They are prepared, and their coaching staff doesn't miss a beat. It's like I went on that tirade yesterday, not tirade, more of a monologue yesterday, about what the Patriots do. They grow everything from within. Their assistants, their coordinators, everything comes from inside the building. Their scouts, their quality control people, their analytics people are all grown in-house. They rarely bring a guy from outside unless he's been there before. They have a way of doing things, and they are all on the same page, pulling the same direction, and they have a way to get their players to play mistake-free better than any team in the league. It's not the talent that beats you. It's their preparation and their execution that beats you. So I'm not – A.J. Green isn't the ingredient to beat the Patriots. It's preparation and your own guys that'll do it.
Hey, we'll continue to talk about this topic as the Bills get set to play the Philadelphia Eagles. This week's game sponsor, by the way, is Eat Right Foods, Western New York's premier meal prep service, prepared daily, providing fresh and healthy meals for grab and go and pre-order, pickup, or delivery. They're this week's game sponsor. How badly do the Bills need to make a deal? We'll continue that talk, and we'll run it by our guest coming up next hour, Field Yates, ESPN NFL Insider. We'll also take your fantasy football questions for Field Yates. He's got a little knack of picking fantasy football winners. That's coming up next hour. Come on back. One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, live from the Seneca Studio, Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing comes close.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.